Good evening. So how many of you have ever lost something? And I see a kind of a show of hands. We'll give you another second because I see some hands not raised. All right, now another question. How many of you have lost something today? Anybody? Okay, good. My hand is up in the air. Amanda and I were talking about some things we weren't quite sure were there. How many of you on your way to worship tonight could not find your car keys? Is that anybody tonight? Okay, it's all right. We won't shame you if that's the case. I see some maybe fingers pointing, but no hands up in the air, so don't look at your neighbor. Don't elbow jab. Yeah, we've all had that experience of losing something, haven't we? no elbow jab. We've all had that experience of losing something. Right now, it seems like in our house, number one, we feel like we're kind of always just losing a little bit of sleep, a little bit of our sanity, kind of with life with a nine-year-old. That's just kind of the way it goes. We lose a lot of binkies. Almost every night, it's like, okay, we've got to find some binkies. We kind of keep a reserve on the nightstand, so when we have to go up there at 2 o'clock in the morning, we can find one real quick, but we're always looking for them. I'm still looking for something I lost when I was probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. It was Easter morning, and along with kind of the Easter basket full of candy, I received this Batman action figure. It was the coolest Batman action figure in the world. It had this like really cool armor on it, and I forget what all made this Batman special, but it was the coolest thing in the world, and by about 2 o'clock that afternoon, I had no idea where it went to. I thought for sure it was stuck in the couch, but I spent all afternoon, all evening, and then days on end after that trying to find this armored Batman action figure with just a desperation and obsession. I wanted this Batman figure. I had it, and then I lost it. I still, to this day, have no clue where it's at. The conspiracy theories abound. But that feeling of just having lost something that you once held closely, something that you once held dear, the feeling most of us can relate to. And I think if we're honest, I think sometimes all of us have that season in life as followers of Jesus where it feels a little bit like we've lost something. Like we kind of come to a place in our walk with Jesus where it just doesn't quite feel the same. Where it's not that there's not the same kind of warm, fuzzy feelings. There's not the same type of intimacy and closeness and connections with Jesus. We get into this place where it feels like we're just kind of going through the motions. We've lost some type of a connection. Tonight, I want us to talk a little bit about just this idea of chasing after God. A few weeks ago, we looked at Psalm 63, and I want us to look there again tonight. So if you've got a Bible, why don't you open up to Psalm 63 as we reflect on this a little bit more deeply. But we have these times in life where we just feel a bit lost, or we just feel just kind of a bit empty, or it feels like maybe we're just a little bit desperate, like things aren't quite what it seems like. Now, Psalm 63... It is one of my favorite psalms in the Bible. Let's read it, and we'll talk a little bit about it. It starts like this. It says, "You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. I've seen you in the sanctuary. I've beheld your power and your glory because your love is better than life. My lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift my hands. I will be fully satisfied as with the riches of foods. With singing lips, my mouth will praise you. On my bed, I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night because you are my help. I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Those who want to kill me will be destroyed. They will go down to the depths of the earth. They will be given over to the sword and become food for jackals. But the king will rejoice in God, and all who swear by God will glory in him, while the mouths of liars will be silenced." I don't know if you know the story behind Psalm 63 or not. You'd kind of be forgiven for not knowing it, because we don't often think about the Psalms in historical context. But a lot of them... all of them were written in a particular time and a particular place. And some of them, like Psalm 63, we actually know kind of what's going on while David is writing. If you look down at your Bible, it says that this is a psalm of David. It means that David wrote this psalm. And it says that when it was when he was in the wilderness or when he was in the desert. Now, if you're familiar with David, David is one of the great kings of Israel, arguably the greatest king Israel ever had. And there were a couple seasons during David's life when he was in the wilderness, when he was on the run. The first of those came before he was actually crowned as king, when he was kind of running away from Saul, who at the time was the reigning king of Israel. But there was a second time in David's life, much later, after he had become king, and honestly, after he had accomplished a lot of really, really great things. He had helped to create Israel as this powerful nation that was wealthy and respected. But then, some things just kind of fell through. Seems like kind of in this whirlwind that David's life fell apart. There was sin with Bathsheba. And then after the sin with Bathsheba, his family just started to fall apart. And you can read about the story in 2 Samuel starting in about chapter 15. We don't have time, obviously, to read the whole story tonight. But David's son makes a power grab. If you remember the story, and he runs David out of town. David, this great, powerful king. David, who had had so many things going his way. David, who was so respected and so looked up to the people around him. David, who had accomplished so much, was now chased out of town because his son was trying to take over the kingdom in this coup. And I would imagine, we don't know for sure, but I would imagine if I were David, and I was there kind of roaming around the wilderness because my own son was coming for my kingdom, and I might feel a bit lost. See, things have been going so well for him, and then in what seems like almost a blink of an eye, everything just falls apart. And there he is, not sitting in his palace on his throne, surrounded by servants and surrounded by luxury, but in the wilderness. Running away from his own son. I don't know if you've ever been there before. I don't know if you've ever been in that place where things are going so well and it seems like nothing could go wrong when all of a sudden everything goes wrong. I don't know if you've ever been in that place where it seems like everything's going your way and then it seems in just like an instant that nothing is going your way whatsoever. And that's where David is. As David writes this psalm, that's where he is. He is in the wilderness. When everything had been going so well, is now going so terribly against him, he finds himself in the wilderness. And when that happens, when we come to that moment in life where we are kind of in the wilderness, in the spiritual wilderness, we can respond in a couple ways. We can respond by just getting angry. We can respond by growing bitter and despondent and despair and all of those kind of negative emotions. Or we can respond like David does in this psalm. Because in this psalm, when David is there in the midst of the wilderness, in the midst of this desperation, having lost so much, what does he do? What is this psalm all about? This is a cry of desperation. It's a cry of chasing after God. And that's what I want us to think about tonight. Because I don't know where you are. There are a number of us in this room, I don't know exactly how many, but there are people here from all over and of the valley, and we've got all kinds of different life experiences, and we're all in a different spot. Maybe this is where you are right now. Maybe it feels like nothing's going your way at all. Or maybe you feel like everything, like nothing could go wrong. But all of us, whether we're there now or whether we will be in the future, will be in a similar place. And so how do we respond? What do we do in that moment? And I want to allow this psalm tonight to be an encouragement for us, an encouragement in that moment of desperation, in that wilderness experience, to chase after God. If you look at this psalm, David does that in kind of a number of ways. He chases after God obsessively. Look again at verses 1 through 3. He says, "You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. As in, or my whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water." This is my whole being longs for you. We talked as we looked at this passage a few weeks ago about the idea of thirst in the desert. It's a lot different than thirst in kind of a world where we've got running water and we've got water fountains and we've got water bottles and we've got water everywhere we could want it. This thirst that David expresses to God is a desperate thirst. And he says that, God, I long for you like I'm in a dry and weary land. See, because that's what David's soul is like. Because as David is here in the wilderness, as David feels so disconnected from the life that he knew and so disconnected from God, he felt parched, just dry and empty. But in the midst of that, he says, God, I earnestly seek you. And that idea of earnestly seeking isn't just kind of a meandering walking down the lane, but it is a passionate pursuit. It is an obsessive drive to seek God, to be in relationship with God, to find God again. Because David remembers. He remembers what it's like. In verse 2, it says, I've seen you in the sanctuary, beheld your power and glory. And I know that your love is better than life. And because of that, because David knew what he had lost, because David knew what it was like to be in relationship with God and to have that close connection and that intimacy, David says, earnestly I seek you. I obsessively chase after you. And so the question we have to think about, whether we are in that place of feeling a bit lost or feeling like we have lost something, or whether we are on the top of the world, are you thirsty for God's presence? Are you thirsty for relationship with him? Do you hunger for that? Do you long for that? David says, my whole being longs for you. Every part of who I am, David says, longs for you. Is that where your heart is? Is that where your soul is? Or is this just kind of something you tack on? Are you thirsty for God? Then the question becomes, if I am, if I am thirsty for God, if I do relate with David's passion and David's drive and his hunger and thirst for God, then what do we do? And how do we respond to that? Well, then you chase after God. If you long for God, if you hunger for God, then seek God with everything that you have. Allow that to become the driving focus of your life. If you hunger for God, if your soul is dry and empty, then reorient your entire life around chasing after God. It means cutting out things that get in the way, things that get you off track, things that are just hindrances in your pursuit of God. And then adding in those things that help you come closer to God, adding in more prayer and more time in the Word and more time together with fellow Christians, more time serving the community around us so that your entire life becomes this passionate pursuit, obsessive pursuit of chasing after God. Next thing we see from David is that David chases after God worshipfully. Look at verses, starting in verse 5. He says, I will be fully satisfied as with the riches of foods and with singing my lips, or with singing lips, my mouth will praise you. On my bed, I remember you. I think of you in the watches of the night because you are my help. I sing in the shadow of your wings. The things you could argue aren't going particularly well for David when he writes this psalm. Things aren't peachy and rosy. David's not sitting in his temple. David isn't sitting in his palace. David is in the wilderness on the run because his son is trying to take over his kingdom. You could say, I think with a little bit of truth, that David's life circumstances weren't all that good. David wasn't exactly in a happy place. And yet, what does he say? He says, with singing lips, my mouth will praise you. I sing in the shadow of your wings. Because despite his circumstance, David knew that God was still worthy of praise. And see, that's a challenge for us. When everything falls apart, when we find ourselves there in the wilderness, the temptation that we face is to forget that God is worthy of praise. The temptation is to blame God for all of the bad things that are happening to us. The temptation is to throw all of the blame and all of the accusation on God. But the response that David leads us in is a response that says, God, even though nothing around me right now seems good, even though I feel so desperate and feel so alone, God, you are still worthy of praise. And because of that, I will sing to you and I will praise you. There's something that happens to our hearts, I think, when we sing together. When we sing, there's something that happens in our heart and our soul. Happens in our mind, and literally happens with your body too, because that's how you make sounds. Singing does something to our hearts. And singing does something to our hearts, especially when we sing when we don't feel like it. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of coming to a worship gathering before where you just are in a bad mood. You're just in a kind of a down state, where you're just in a little bit of a funk, where something's just not right. Like, you don't feel like singing. You feel like going and taking a nap or whatever. But then in the process of singing, in the process of proclaiming the psalm that Keaton led us, Jesus, you are all to us, that something shifts. It's not like all of your circumstance becomes fantastic. It's not like all of a sudden you go home and you've got all your bills paid and all the projects done and you've got a Ferrari in the garage. But in the process of singing, there's a shift. There's a shift in our heart. Because when we chase after God worshipfully, it changes our heart. And so as we think about whether we're in that place or whether we know someday we're going to be, are you worshiping God? Or whatever it is that you're experiencing or whatever it is that you're going to experience, are you worshiping God? Whether you feel like it or whether you don't, because God, no matter what happens around us, is still worthy of praise. And that's because we can chase after God expectantly. David closes out this psalm with expectation. He says in verse 8, I cling to you, your right hand upholds me. Then it goes on to talk about the victory that he's going to have. It says in verse 11, the king will rejoice in God, and that all who swear by God will glory in him, and while the mouths of liars will be silenced. See, David chases after God in worship, and he chases after God obsessively like this, because he knows that God is going to come through for him. And see, when we're in the wilderness, it seems like that's all there is. When everything falls apart, it seems like things could never get better. Have you ever been in that place? Things were fantastic, and then all of a sudden things are terrible, and it seems like they're never going to get better. But David leads us in a response that says, I know things are going to get better. I know that God is going to come through, that there is a brighter day that is on the horizon. And see, as people who believe in Jesus, and more than that, as people who believe in the resurrection of Jesus, we of all people should know that a better day is coming. That the darkest thing the world has to offer us, the darkest day that we could ever experience, is never going to be the end. There is always, on the other side of the darkness, on the other side of the tragedy, on the other side of whatever brokenness we experience, there is always life, and there is joy, and there is glory because of the cross and the resurrection of Jesus. Because, see, the cross and the resurrection of Jesus remind us that when the world and the evil one throw their worst at us, and it seems like there is just utter darkness, the resurrection comes, that there is new life on the other side. And so we hold on to that. We hold on to that hope right now. If things are great, hold on to that hope. If things are terrible, hold on to that hope. Wherever we are, we hold on to that hope and we chase after God expectantly because we know that new life is possible. We know that we will come through the other side. Because God is a good, loving God. And so we chase after God obsessively with everything that we have. We chase after God worshipfully because he is a good God. We chase after God expectantly because he has promised that he is going to be good to us. And see, that's the invitation for us tonight, to chase after God like this. not just to go through the motions, not just to wander about the wilderness, wondering if it's ever going to get better, but to intentionally chase after God, to reorient our entire life around Him, to reorient our entire heart around Him in hope that whatever comes, resurrection comes on the other side. And so as we do every time we gather together, we carve out a chance for us to respond. And maybe that response is just in your singing. Like, we often kind of think that the song after the preacher gives the invitation is just for other people to, like, come up front. Like, it's just kind of a time killer so that we can, someone can make that long walk down the aisle. But that song is a response song. It's a chance for us to express our heart's desire, our depth of our desperation, our depth of our joy or celebration or whatever it is back to God. That song is a response to the work that God is doing right now. But if you need to respond more than just singing because you're really struggling right now and you need prayers, this is a chance for us to pray together. This is a chance for us to surround one another, to wrap our arms around each other and to pray to God expectantly and worshipfully and obsessively. Or tonight, if you've never given your life to Jesus through baptism, then right now is a chance where you can make the decision to become a follower of Jesus and to receive that resurrection life that He has promised us. If you need to respond, either through singing or through prayer or through baptism, why don't you talk to us as we come and stand and worship.